Okay, so
Mike at the movies. We're going to the movies with Mike. What did Mike see this time? It's Raiders of the Lost. I can't do it. I can't be Elliot Kalin singing the. It's Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is not its title, but it's how it's marketed now. It's just Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, so this was
Steven
one of
Spielberg.
This was one of the things that I noticed originally. It was just called Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then when I searched on IMDb to find some names of the characters for my notes, it took me a moment to find it. Because I was looking for Indiana Jones and it wasn't coming up, and then realized that, oh, it was just called Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because nobody cared about Indiana Jones before the movie came out, right?
Like, indeed.
Why would you care? Oh, Indiana Jones? I haven't heard of that guy before. I'm going to love that movie.
Yeah.
And they probably, I'm going to assume, didn't know that it was going to be a franchise, right? Because...
I'm sure they hoped.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is Steven Spielberg and George Lucas at the, you know, I don't know about the height of Steven Spielberg's career, because he went on to, you know, have this amazing career after this. But this was like at the height of their fame as these young producers and directors who had made these giant blockbuster films, and they decided to collaborate on Raiders of the Lost Ark, and everybody went crazy, like, oh my god, it's the next big thing. So I imagine they thought it would be
a
big franchise.
Han Solo.
And starring Han Solo. Exactly right. Who was, I think, reluctant. Harrison Ford was initially reluctant to be in this movie because he felt it was too similar to Han Solo, but he did it.
So before going in,
Tom Selleck was going to be Indiana Jones, by the way, but he couldn't do it because of Magnum PI. Yeah. Yeah. I know. What a world. There's a parallel universe out there where Tom Selleck was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I can imagine that. Like, I mean, I'll talk about the character in general in a minute, like as I go through, but I can imagine Tom Selleck also fitting that role. Like, in my mind, I get that. Okay, so before I watched this movie, there were a couple of things that I knew about Indiana Jones. Right?
Okay.
I knew the character. Right. I knew, you know, I know Indiana Jones as a character.
Good.
I know about
good start.
I know about the boulder, right? I know about the face melting, and I know about sliding under a closing door.
You know about what?
The face melting.
What was the first one?
The boulder.
Oh, the boulder. Okay, yes. I almost heard, I know about Ebola. That's not really relevant to this at all. The boulder. Giant rolling boulder.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
Didn't you get the Ebola subplot of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jason?
I missed the subtext there.
So I'm going to go through and talk through my notes. I do very much enjoy doing this, but it is very peculiar. I mean, I'm sure you feel sort of time to watch a movie and take notes on the movie, because I don't know how you do this, but I pause the movie and make some notes and then start again. Do you do that when you take notes in movies?
No, because it's generally, no, I just generally just keep taking the notes. Huh. So if something really amazing happens immediately after something other amazing and noteworthy, then I might miss it. And in which case, I would back it up, I suppose.
Yeah, because I felt that sometimes I lose, like it's like 20 minutes later and I don't know what's happening. It's because I realize I lost 30 seconds, but those 30 seconds, something really important happened in them. Like that's happened to me. So that's why I pause. So I don't end up with more confusion later. My first note is I was, you know, noting Indiana Jones. There is no Indiana Jones in the title. My next note that I have here is something that I feel is pretty consistent feeling that you're going to hear me mention quite a bit. That whilst I think a whip is super cool, I don't think it's probably the most effective weapon in any instance that he uses it.
Well, it's tool. I think it's not his only tool. It is kind of his trademark, but it's not his only tool. And
sure.
I don't know, archaeologist, you're getting in and out of scrapes in funny areas, and it obviously it's quite versatile with what he does with it. He's very good at the whip.
Yeah, that's my thing, though. It's like, I don't think anybody could be that good.
Well, this is a little like when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons and somebody says, I'm going to do something with rope, right? And it's like, rope doesn't do that. You could try to do that. That's, what do you think this rope is? This magic rope? Because rope is very limited in its utility, and I think whips are similarly limited.
You know, it's like any time a grappling hook is used to cross a cavern in any movie, grappling hooks do not do that. in the one go. Like, I saw Star Wars. I watched Star Wars this weekend. And, you know, when Luke and Leia are going across that cavern, you know, in the Death Star, and he, like, throws up this grappling hook from his Batman utility belt, which apparently Luke had for the rest of the movie that nobody bothered to mention. I don't know where. It's never explained.
I need to cross caverns sometimes.
And, you know, he uses that and he throws it up there, and in one, it, like, goes around and hooks on perfectly.
Yeah, amazing.
Yep.
Just what you need for that, in case you are trapped in a place where people work that has giant bottomless pits.
It's, you know, just these things happen. Workplace hazards, you know?
Anyway, but this isn't about Star Wars.
No. I found the beginning of this movie to be very mysterious. Like, there's no explanation to what is happening, right? You're just in the jungle.
Right.
And also, like, something that I found really interesting, and I wonder how people took to this when it first came out. Because Indy is in this first scene, right, when they're going after the idol. There is no kind of clear explanation as to whether this character is a good guy or a bad guy.
Well, in fact, if you look, you'll see that he's in shadow at the beginning, and his back is turned to the camera, and we don't actually see his face for a long time.
Nope.
He's mysterious at the beginning,
because then it's like the people that look like they're up to no good, and they have accents, right? And it's like, and then he's siding with these people, and it's like, is this a good person or a bad person? I can see how that, you know, people might have thought that, because I was watching
the star of the movie, so, you know.
Yeah, but you didn't necessarily, well, okay. I mean, you if you knew Harrison Ford, right? But I mean, this is assuming knowledge of it, but anyway, doesn't mean he's a good guy. Then, you know, we go through the whole scene with Alfred Molina, who may be my favorite character in this movie. I think he is amazing. He's just so great. All of his terror at everything is just brilliant. And that they go and grab the idol. And so much of what I knew about Indiana Jones happens in this sequence.
In that opening sequence, yeah.
Which is something that I found really interesting. I didn't expect to get both the boulder and the sliding under the door in the same movie, let alone in the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And even like the replacing the idol with a bag of sand. All of these things have been played out so many times. But like watching them here, it's always difficult when you're watching a movie like this. Having seen a bunch of movies that like use things that are probably unique to this movie, like later, that become tropes, because when you watch them, you have less appreciation, I think. So I try and leave those things at the door and appreciate the movie for what it is, but it is very difficult when you have all this like retroactive knowledge about the film before you've even seen it.
Although the film is itself it's an homage to adventure serials, just as Star Wars is, really, to adventure serials of the 50s, I guess, and before. So it's not, you know, it's a respinning of some old tropes into things that were then became so influential that you saw them again afterward because of this.
And then, again, another consistent theme along with the whip is how gory this movie is. Surprised me.
Well, there are, So Zepeda takes the idol and doesn't give back the whip, but he is not careful and gets impaled by the spikes, just as Forrestal, not Scott Forrestal, but Forrestal bought it here earlier, and they find his skeleton, and then as Indiana goes under the with his whip and goes under the little dropping down door, which is dropping for a very long time, he finds Alfred Molina impaled likewise on the spikes, and says adios, Zepeda, and takes the idol and then runs away. That's a pretty gory moment just then. Right.
Yeah.
And then later there's the face melting and things that happen at the end. There's not quite so much in the middle, but, other than things involving airplane propellers in the desert. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I'll give it to you.
I've noted down more gory parts, which I'll get to.
It's the gory details is what you're saying.
Indeed. Then of course we have the boulder, right? Which this is such a huge action moment to put at the start of a movie. Because it is so insane, right? It's a huge boulder chasing you and you're trying to escape from it. Lots of danger, lots of excitement. And this like real like rise of action right at the start of the movie reminds me of a James Bond film. He's going on this little adventure, which sets up
definitely,
the character.
That's definitely the model here. James Bond is absolutely one of the models for Indiana Jones and for this movie. The flavor is a little different, but it's definitely one of the models. And then also it's that cliffhanger feel of a serial, of a movie serial, where you're coming in at the end of his adventure and seeing, you know, how will he escape the rolling boulder, and you back up and sort of see the action that came before, and now we'll see the resolution. And they're trying to give you that feeling too. But that's the same thing that James Bond does. It's the exact same thing. You're usually in those James Bond movies, you're catching up on something that isn't related to the movie. And it's just sort of like, here's what happened in this off-screen adventure that James Bond had, and now we're getting the resolution of it. But it's definitely very Bond-like.
Like Indiana Jones, I'm also scared of snakes, right? Because he has the snake that's in the plane, which also made me laugh because there was a snake on the plane, which made me smile. Mm. So little did I know at this point that I was not set up for a good ride here. There were going to be a lot more snakes as the movie progresses.
Yes, that is a... they're setting up his fear of snakes for later payoff.
And then we have, in a row here, we have two in a row massive shocks to me about this movie. Shock number one is that Indiana Jones is a professor.
Yes.
I did not know this, and Dr. I was extremely surprised. Because at first I thought, oh, like, that's a surprise. He must have retired, right? And now he is a professor, and he is going to be called back into action. But no, he is a professor who, as part of his professor duties, goes on massive adventures, right? Which I love the thought that, like, there are archaeologists that are teaching archaeologists who are sent by the museum, whatever that is, the museum, to go out into the world and steal things. I love
the university museum.
The university museum that we must protect. I also really loved... in as 80s movies will be. This is in the 80s?
Yeah, it's 1981, I want to say.
Okay, great. In a great 80s movie fashion, all of the girls are in love with him in the class, yes. To the point where I really, really enjoyed the "love you" written on that one girl's
on
eyelids.
On her eyelids.
Genius. Yeah. But...
And the guy puts the male student puts the apple on the desk too. I love that. So everybody loves Dr. Jones.
But I have to say, Harrison Ford in this movie is an extremely handsome man. Like, there are points in this movie where I'm like, oh my God, look at you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Actually, it's quite a shock, right? We've seen him all scruffy in the jungle. And then you cut to him writing on the chalkboard, and you're like, whoa, what just happened, right? Yeah. He cleans up kind of nice, and that's how we meet Dr. Jones in his element for the first time.
And I do, you know, now I feel, having seen these movies, that Indiana Jones is more attractive than Han Solo.
I agree.
So...
he's just a scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Uh-huh. Yep. The next huge surprise for me that I was not expecting was the Nazis. I didn't know that the Nazis were going to be in this movie. 1936 did not set off any alarm bells. I just didn't expect it. I was very surprised that I know him as an archaeology professor, is going to be fighting the Nazis in this movie. And, you know, this ties into these two points tying to archaeologists are cool. You know?
Archaeologists are, how many archaeology careers were launched with Raiders of the Lost Ark? I don't know. But he ends up fighting the Nazis, right? But it's really about the Nazis are after an archaeological item, and the U.S. government says, we don't want him to get this item. And so Indiana Jones is on the case at that point. So it's sort of like, who's going to get the item? Who's going to get the Ark of the Covenant? And then the globe-trotting adventure begins. And the Nazis are, pre-war Nazi Germany are the villains, which is, it's interesting. So there are no open hostilities. He can move, around the world, but it's very clear that they're, the Nazis and Hitler are not, it's not going to go well, right? So, yep. So they're good villains to have at that point.
Hitler is mentioned so much in this movie. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for him to make an appearance.
Yeah, he appears in The Last Crusade.
Okay.
in a jokey scene that I don't really enjoy, but it's funny. It's so broad that I don't. One of my criticisms of The Last Crusade, which is a very good movie, it's not a Raiders level, but it's a good movie. It's the other good movie in the series, I would say. That's going to make some people sad, but the Nazis are much more slapstick villains in that, whereas they feel really menacing here for the most part.
Yeah. There is a lot of slapstick in this movie.
Yeah. Hitler signs an autograph for somebody in Last Crusade. It's not. Anyway, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so then we have... We discover Marion, right?
Marion, yeah. Marion Ravenwood.
She's
Karen
drinking
Allen.
An awful lot of alcohol. She's having...
She's drinking the other Nepalese or wherever they are, Tibetans, are under the table.
She recovers extremely fast from the amount of alcohol that she consumed as Indy arrives.
She's really good at holding her liquor, is the lesson we've learned about Marion.
And then, basically Indy is on his quest now to find the Ark of the Covenant, mm-hmm. which is what the Ten Commandments were expected to be stowed into. There is a whole, we set up the idea of there could be magic within here at this point.
Yeah, let me pause you just to say, and we talked about this on the Incomparable episode about Raiders, I think it's actually kind of a masterful scene, the exposition scene that happens where they're like in the auditorium at the college, and it's Indy and his mentor and the two guys from the government. They explain all this stuff about the Ark of the Covenant and all that. And that is maybe my favorite exposition scene in any film, because it's so dramatic and interesting, and yet it really is like a guy at a chalkboard explaining the Bible.
But the other thing is, it doesn't feel like... I mean, it is exposition. It doesn't have the exposition feeling to it.
That's
like,
why it's so good.
Yeah. It is being explained to these two people, because these two people clearly don't understand what they're dealing with, and... It works. It works. I agree with you. I didn't realize until now how well that scene actually worked, because it kind of... I just took it in as information I needed. So Indy has arrived and he has asked for... it's like an amulet of...
The headpiece of the Staff of Ra, which is like on a necklace, mm-hmm. in Nepal. His old mentor, Abner, is dead, but his daughter and Indy's ex-girlfriend, Marion, is mm-hmm. running this bar. And she says she knows where it is. Come back tomorrow.
And then some evil German accents appear.
Yes.
the most evil that you could imagine a German accent to be. Like, it's not just a German accent. There's also like a weirdness to the voice. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's almost like a Peter Lorre kind of thing. Where it's, I think what Tote says, the Nazi in question, is, she's like going to get a drink for you and your men when she realizes they're going to be threatening her. And he says, we are not thirsty. And it's like, oh, my God.
Your fire is dying. Is dying.
Yeah. Yeah. So creepy. Yeah. He's a bad guy. Suffice it to say, that's a bad guy.
Not only is he wearing all black, and then later in the movie where he gets like the nunchucks coat hanger, like what is that thing about?
That's a pretty good gag, though. Oh my God, what's he going to do with that? Oh, he's just hanging up his coat.
So this is another point. Again, whilst it's cool using a whip to grab a hot poker whilst it's in inches from somebody's face, I think bad idea. I think that is a poor choice.
The tools that are available at the time, I would say.
He has a gun because he gets it out next.
But he wants to pull the poker away so it doesn't burn Marion.
I think that there's
he could have
more...
just easily like just whipped her in the face at that point, or whipped it forward into her face.
That's what I expect. Right? The force of the whip hitting the poker would have hit her in the face.
Indiana Jones is that good.
It appears so, wouldn't it? So this is where a lot of gore is occurring. In that there is a gunfight, right? That happens in the bar. And there is an incredible amount of blood here. There are lots of people on fire. It's just surprising to me. Like, there's one point where someone gets shot in the head. And...
Yeah,
it's not like what you usually see in a movie. The guy gets shot in the head, you see a gunshot wound immediately appear on his head, it doesn't move, he just falls forward. Which is actually, I believe, after watching Mythbusters, what actually does happen. Like, you don't fly across the room when you get shot.
Sure, right.
You just stop where you are and fall down. And it's real enough looking that it was very surprising to me. There's lots of people with blood pouring out of their mouths after they're shot in the back.
Yeah, you get the thing where Indy thinks he's been shot by the guy, but it turns out that the guy has been shot and his mouth opens and blood pours out and he falls down.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it's not a complaint. It was just surprising. I was surprised by it. I don't know what rating this movie was, but
The US rating is PG.
Yeah, see, that surprises me. I feel like that you couldn't do this now and still get PG.
It would be a PG-13 now.
Yeah, that's sort of right.
In fact, the second movie in this series is what essentially created the PG-13 rating, because it's even more, far more brutal.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. James Thompson in the chat room says, I saw this film when I was 8 and it did traumatize me a bit. Mm-hmm. So there you go. My notes jump quite significantly here, so... I'm now straight at the point where they're having the chase in the desert town. I can't remember where they are.
So what happens is that Toad tries to grab the medallion, but it's been in the fire, so it's burning hot, and so he screams and jumps out and puts his hand in the snow.
Yeah, I don't know why he jumps out the window. Like, he just ran out the door, man.
Yeah, yeah, he just runs out the window. He's driven mad. The thing's burning down. Karen Allen picks up the thing with a cloth and says to Indy that she's coming with him because they're partners, and we follow the little, you know, the airplane on the map montage, mm-hmm. which we saw to get to Nepal, now leaves Nepal and goes to Egypt, where they meet up with Sala, who is John Rhys-Davies, and he says that the Nazis are digging out in the desert because they think they've found Tanis, the lost city, out in the desert, and so is it the chase? Which chase are you referring to? Is it the first one where... Yeah. Where she gets kidnapped.
Mm-hmm. So the next point in my notes, like, so Marion at this point is in a basket being taken around by a couple of villains, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just like the bit where, like, you know, this is another famous scene. Now that I've seen it, I know people are referencing it. You've got the huge tall guy who's throwing the sword around, right?
Yeah.
Getting ready for the showdown, and Indy just shoots him.
Yep.
Which is great.
The story is that Harrison Ford was like had the flu or something and was incredibly sick, and they got to the end of the day shooting that and they didn't, you know, and he was like, what if I just shoot him and we don't do a big fight scene? And they said, all right, let's do that. That's the story anyway. But it's a really funny moment that Indy is just, he doesn't go in for that kind of showbiz stuff. He's going to, whatever, I can just shoot you.
Unless there's a bullwhip involved.
Unless there's a whip involved, yeah. He couldn't use the whip in that situation, so...
He just whipped him in the eye or something.
He was tired. Well, one of the things that happens with Indy in this movie and in general is that he gets beat up. Like, I like that about him. You root for him in part because he keeps getting beat up. He's punched, he's bloody, he's tired. You get the sense he's really tired and he wants to go lie down, but he can't because he's got to fight the Nazis instead.
So, you know, at this point, Marion's put into the back of a truck full of explosives. I was not expecting her to be blown up.
Yeah. It is a surprise when she's blown up. And it's
and
very
I
sad.
Thought she was dead. Right.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, it the way it's edited, it's very hard to imagine how she wasn't put in the truck. But we just hear her voice and see the baskets, and it turns out she's in another basket, and not that basket, I guess, but... It's unclear how she gets out of the truck before it explodes.
Yeah.
But at that point, Indy is essentially suicidal, so he basically goes and finds Belloc, his tormentor, and is like, go ahead, make my day. We'll both go. You know, we'll both die. And they save him and talk him out of it and convince him to go out into the desert and try to dig in the right place, because we learn that the Nazis are digging in the wrong place because they've copied the headpiece from the burn on evil German Tote's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the instructions on the backside of it say, take away a couple of cubits.
Yeah.
And so they're digging in the wrong place. So they got to go. Jones has got to go to the Well of Souls and, with his little stick and the little headpiece and find where to dig properly to get this artifact.
So a couple of points that I had leading in between these two, points that we have here. There's one where, you know, after Marion has died and Indy's sitting at a bar and he's drinking, and there's a lot of close-up shots of him, and it was at that moment that I decided that Chris Pratt should be the new Indiana Jones and they should reboot it.
That might happen.
Well, they've just announced Indy 5, and by all intents and purposes it seems like it will have Harrison Ford in it, so because it's Indiana Jones 5. But I feel like they could start again because Chris Pratt is perfect for the role, in my opinion, and looks enough like Harrison Ford. I kind of wish that Shia LaBeouf kind of wasn't his son, because Chris Pratt kind of is Harrison Ford's son. You know, they look very, very similar, and I would quite like to see that, because I am a big fan of Chris Pratt. I like his work. I was surprised the monkey died, even though the monkey is a traitor, a treacherous traitor.
He's a Nazi monkey.
Nazi monkey. even though he is a Nazi monkey, he eats the dates like a silly Nazi monkey, and then he dies. And then when we're up to the point that you're at, Harrison Ford goes down into the pit, like the map room, I think
the
they call
room,
it.
The map room, yeah.
And he does all of his archaeological stuff. He points at things on the floor and he brushes sand away and he finds out, you know, where the correct place needs to be. And then, you know, there's a hoo-ha-ha, but he ends up getting out of there. And that's when Marion is alive. And I wrote in my notes, she's alive, because I was very excited about that and also happy.
But then he leaves her there. He's going to untie her, and then he realizes they'll know that he's there if he has her, helps her escape. So he says, I'm going to leave you here. And that infuriates her, quite rightly so. And he leaves to go get his prize.
That's smart, though, to me. Yeah. Like, you don't see that sort of stuff in movies.
No, it is smart, but I also love that it infuriates her. And yeah, I like that moment a lot, that she's infuriated that he's going to leave her there.
And then there's the whole, basically, that they're at the point now they know where they got to go, and they start digging. And then, you know, I don't know why they thought they wouldn't get caught because they find the Ark of the Covenant, right? Well,
big desert.
Yeah, but it's not far from the site.
Yeah, no, right? they can see him up there. They almost get away with it, but they don't get away with it. So they toss Indy and Marion into the. Into the pit after getting the Ark of the Covenant out, and of course it's full of snakes down there.
Asps, it's very dangerous. You go first.
Yeah, there's a nice moment where Sala says, you go first.
Yeah, I didn't like all the snakes in this bit. One of my favorite points, again, this enforces the craziness of using a whip. Marion burns Indy's leg thinking that the whip was a snake.
Yes.
It's like, see, whip is silly. I do like the whip, by the way. I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to seem as anti-whip. I just think that there are times where the whip works and times where the whip doesn't work. And then, you know, they kind of get out. And then there's like this horrific... So basically, Indy climbs up this big statue, knocks it down, creates a hole in the wall, right? And then there's this horrific scene, right? Another, like, really... And this one, out of place.
Where there's like desiccated bodies that have been buried on the other side of the wall.
And then there's the snake that comes out of the skull.
Yeah.
Why does that happen? I can't get that image out of my mind.
It's meant to be spooky and scary. Yeah.
So then,
but then pay no mind to that, because even though this thing has been entombed for 1,000 or 2,000 years, through that wall is where there's people buried, and then through that is like a window, and you can just crawl out, and somehow it's remained undiscovered all of this time. But no time to think about that, because
there's an airfield.
It's going on a plane, and we need to get to the plane, and so there's another set piece where they try to hijack the plane, and there's like a big Nazi who's like a bare knuckle boxer kind of guy, big bald Nazi who's trying to fight Indy while they're kind of like stuck in the cockpit, and there's the gas leak and an open flame, and you know all of these things are happening at once, where there's a ticking countdown and there's a guy who's trying to kill Indy, and there's the spinning.
Marion is mowing people down with a gun attached to the plane.
Yeah, a lot going on there.
And then more blood.
And then the guy gets chopped up in the propeller blade, which we don't see, but we see him go, ah, and then we see like
a bucket of blood.
Sound effect, and there's a stream of a splatter of blood.
And of course, when they're fighting, there's blood all over them, right? They're getting busted open.
Because Andy's getting beat up, which again is one of his charms, is that he gets beat up. He's not one of these heroes who's like, I'm okay, you know, I'm okay. Like, I fell out of a, like in the Avengers, like I fell out of a 4-story building, but I'll walk it off. Like Captain America says in that movie, if you die, walk it off.
I like that line, by the way.
Indiana Jones just gets the crap beat out of him, and you feel bad because you know it hurts. Like, he's not one of those people who,
though,
yes, he does get up and he continues adventuring, you just get the sense that he is taking damage. He is really unhappy with his predicament, and I think that's charming. I think that's one of the things people like about Indy.
I just said he's not tough. He is tough, right? But he's not invincible. He's a professor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And he's, I mean, and that's why we root for him, is that although he's tough, he is getting the crap beat out of him and reacting like we would, presumably, or at least like a human being would, and being like really unhappy about it. And later in the movie, there's that scene where Karen Allen asks where it hurt, where it doesn't hurt. and he, like, his elbow and his forehead. There's very few parts that don't hurt on Indiana Jones.
And his lips.
And his lips. Well, that's his move.
That's a good move.
That's his big move, yeah.
Mm. That was a good move. There's also more blood. I forgot one of my favorite lines. Yeah, it's a car chase. One of my favorite lines in the movie. I do not understand the delivery of this line, right? And I won't be able to effectively deliver it, but I still find it funny. So they get out of the plane or whatever, and then what's the guy's name? Their helper. What's his name?
Sala.
So Sala finds Indy and Marion in a tent, and he's like, "Oh, they're loading the Ark onto a truck." And he's like, "What truck?" Like, I don't know why delivers it. Like, there's a truck here? Like, it was very peculiar.
Yeah.
And he's like, "What truck?" And it's like, "I've never seen a truck before." It's very strange.
Again, that's one of those transition moments where what the movie's really doing is propelling you to the next set piece. So he's just like, "What truck? Like, I must find it." And so then he does.
And then there's a great car chase. There is, you know, one moment in this Indy is in the driver's seat of the truck, right? He finds his way into the truck. And again, more blood, right? He gets shot and, like, his arm gets shot, splatters the blood against the window. Which, again, you don't usually see that in movies. Like, they just get their arm shot. It's like, my arm is shot. And you might see blood on the shirt, but, like, splattered blood. And then some of the craziest stunts I have ever seen in a movie.
I feel like even Avengers 2 quotes this, because there's a similar kind of thing with a battle on a vehicle, and Captain America he's on a truck, and he's moving around because Ultron is battling him. And again, no spoilers here, but I felt like that movie was even quoting this same truck chase, because Indy goes out the window. He gets shot. He goes out the window. He loses purchase on the hood ornament.
Yeah,
it's Mercedes, of course, because it's German. He goes under the truck.
Yeah,
with his
whip,
and is dragged along. Well, I mean, there's a whole documentary about it. But you know, they had a stuntman who was kind of attached, and so he's dragged along underneath, and he's got his whip, and he's being dragged behind, and he pulls himself back, and then he gets into the truck that way and comes back. And it's this whole, and meanwhile, they're like, then they're slamming against other trucks, and the trucks are careering off into like giant ravines that shouldn't be there because they're just out in the desert. The whole thing. It's a classic set piece action truck chase thing where Indy is everywhere in that truck before finally driving it away to the secret location that's been waiting for him, that is, everybody's ready to be in the open air market. And so they drive into the little thing, and the doors close, and then everybody's there, and the Nazis go, "What? But where did it go?"
Yep. Then they're loaded onto a ship.
Yes.
Which is where Marion and Indy finally get to rest. And something I do not understand why this happens, and I wonder if you're going to know where I'm going with this. Marion is wearing a dress, and Indy tells her it's nice, and she looks in the mirror. And she flips the mirror over, and it hits Indy in the face, and then it goes out to
and he screams.
But there's a thunder. There's thunder at the same time, so it masks the scream. And she's like, "What was that?" And he's like,
"Did
nothing."
You say something?
I don't know why that happened. I don't know why that. I mean, is it just? I can see why they did it, right? They're like, "Oh, he's so beaten up, he can't catch a break. He's just getting hurt more." But all of it was so weird.
Yeah. No, it's kind of wacky. And of course he falls asleep. This is their big romantic moment, and
which
he points out where she can kiss the parts that are not hurt, and he points it at his lips and all that, and then he passes out because he's exhausted.
Then the Nazis find them in the worst submarine of all time. I'll come to why that's my verdict in a moment. They come aboard, they get the Ark, which at this point has started to burn out of the box, right? So you know there is evil magic in there or something.
Yeah, or is it good magic because it burns the Nazi symbols off the box.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yep. God hates the Nazis. We know this. Then they take the box, they take Marion. Indy hides in the submarine and then swims across the submarine and gets on the roof of the submarine.
Yep.
The submarine, we then are treated to the submarine going across the globe, right, in a little map.
Yep.
And then it arrives at an island. And Indy's still on the top of the submarine. So either Indiana Jones can hold his breath for days.
Yes.
Or the submarine never submerged, even though they used the periscope.
This is one of the great... Well, and they say in their movie German, because it's the simplest, it's like high school German, Tauchen das U-Boot, which is dive the U-Boat, that it's either they don't dive very far, or like...
Just an inch.
Or I think the implication is that there's probably a scene that we don't see, and I think it might have even been storyboarded and like in the script where he fights his way into the sub and then like is on the sub in that little portion in the conning tower, and then gets out before. But it's just waved away. Like suffice it to say, Indy was fine and he had great adventures on the submarine, and they didn't know he was there. And now we're at the island in the Mediterranean where this is all going to happen. It is a beautiful moment that's completely baffling. Yeah.
And then again, I wasn't expecting Nazis in this movie. And then when there were Nazis, I was still not expecting how much Nazi I was going to get.
Like a giant Nazi base with big banners and stuff.
More swastikas than I think I've seen in any movie. Uh-huh. Like they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a lot of Nazi in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go through this thing and they end up bringing the Ark to this cavern after Indy, tries to blow it up, or like he has an RPG, like a rocket launcher. And he's
threatens. You're not going to blow it up. This is an archaeological marvel. And he's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and convincing, right? I totally bought all of that. He's not going to do it. Like, he loves Marion, but he also loves archaeology. And then they basically tie them to this stick on top of a hill. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of get to the point where they open the
yeah,
ark.
They do a ritual to open the ark, and Belloc is dressed in Jewish ritual garb, and the Germans don't like that. Oh, this Jewish ritual, but he's like, well, it's Hebrew Bible. This is what we do. And Belloc is, they're like, oh, the Fuhrer wants this, and Belloc is very much like, yeah, I'll give it to him when I'm done with it, right? Because Belloc's always got his own plan, and they open the ark. What could go wrong?
Everything.
And there's sand in it, so it's not a problem. And then this is, I think, a bold choice for this movie, and I really like it, which is what happens next is the wrath of God. Like, if you're going to believe that there is a covenant of the Lost Ark, or Lost Ark of the Covenant, and there's the Ten Commandments and all that is real, then at that point you need to believe that the Hebrew Bible God is real. And in this movie, he is, and he's really pissed off at the Nazis, and these angels or demons or whatever they are, appear and
shoot holes in everybody.
All the Nazis die horribly. Yep. But Indy tells Mary to close her eyes, and so they're unaffected.
I don't know why that is what helps, but closing your eyes apparently is all you need to do.
Well, like looking on the face of God, I think, is the idea. It's like it's too much, and it's going to destroy you. Plus, all the Nazis are bad, I guess, and so they're going to get wiped out. I don't think there was like wonder if there's like one Nazi soldier who really didn't want to be there and hated everything and was thinking of defecting, and he got spared. He had something in his eye. I don't know. But yeah, so all the Nazis die and Indy and Marion are safe. The Ark is sealed again, and then that's it. We cut to Washington, D.C., where the FBI men are told, we're putting it in someplace safe where it's going to be looked after by top men, to which Indy says, who? Because Indy knows all the top men who would be looking at it. And they just say, top men, and cut to a giant government warehouse where the Ark has been put in a box and is being filed with millions of other boxes just like it in this huge warehouse, never to be seen again.
Yep.
The end.
Yep. I like that, that it was just this big box. like this big sort of storage facility with a bunch of boxes. You know, I like that. I like that a lot. Because it's just like, oh, there's all this stuff that happens that you don't know about.
James Thompson says it's basically Costco.
Yep.
The Ark of the Covenant may be in Costco.
There was a lot of, for me, of unexpected... Oh, we missed, you know, face melting and head explosions. Of course, that happens with the Wrath of God. That's what that happens there. There were a lot of unexpected things in this movie. Like, that seemed to be like a running thing for me. There were just lots of things that happened that I didn't expect to happen. They did happen. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just something. And it was interesting to me considering that I felt like I knew this movie. How many things in it surprised me, even just the way it was made.
So did you like it?
They do not make movies like this anymore, Jason Snell.
That's true. Did you like it?
I did like it.
Oh, good.
So I think of all of the films, so this is like the third, right? So I say all of, but the three films that I've watched the most, this is the one I have liked the most, but also the one that I had the most problems with. But I think that those two things go hand in hand. And problems, it's like quibbles. Because I think, you know, Real Genius and Princess Bride, they were very easy. And Spinal Tap, they're very easygoing movies, and I liked them a lot. But I appreciated them for what they were. I didn't look at them like I did of Indiana Jones, being like, maybe this is one of the best movies ever made. Like, I didn't think that wasn't what I was thinking as I was watching the others. So yeah. When I put it at that level, when things happen in it that I find are strange, they kind of stick out to me more in my brain as weird things that are happening. But this is such an incredible movie. It's just so good. And like, I was thinking, you know, when I thought to myself, they don't make movies like this anymore, I was thinking, what movies can I think of that are like this? And I think maybe the one that is most like it, most recently for me, is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's Space Indiana Jones, sort of.
Yeah, I felt
and
that.
Chris Pratt in that is also like this.
Space Indiana
like,
Jones.
He's not a super, you know, superhero kind of guy, right? He's just a regular guy who's doing super things and has issues and all of that. That is sort of like, just like how... Indy is, you know, he gets beat up and he's got problems and all of that. You know, this is Steven Spielberg is considered probably one of the greatest directors in history, certainly Hollywood directors, right? I don't know whether he's in the top 5 or the top 20 or whatever. I would argue that this may be his best film. And that I think that just because it's an adventure movie and all of that, I think you need to take it. You don't have to take it seriously, but I think it is, as a piece of filmmaking, it is staggering. It is the imagery in it, the shadows throughout, the lighting he uses shadows to tell so many parts of the story. I've seen this movie like 50 times. I think the script is fantastic. It's Lawrence Kasdan. The direction is great. And this is, I think, what happens when you have a world-class set of talent working on a film and taking it completely seriously, even though it is in this genre, an action adventure genre. This is when you get a work like this. That is, you know, are there better, more serious movies? Sure. But in terms of, including ones that Spielberg has made, but in terms of the whole package and the fact that that this much attention was brought to bear on a movie like this, yeah, it is absolutely one of my all-time top 5, maybe top 2, 3, something like that, films. And, you know, I think we're really privileged to have a director like Steven Spielberg make a movie like this, because he brings his A game to this one. I think more than he did in some of the other, you know, big tentpole action adventure spectaculars that he made in the future. I think this one is I think it's a great work of art. I actually also think it's very personal. And that's one of the reasons why it's so great. Is the reason there are all these Nazis in it is you know, it's the Jewish kid saying, you know, giving the middle finger to the Nazis. And, you know, later he made a much more serious meditation on the Holocaust with Schindler's List. But, you know, here he's sticking it to the Nazis. And that is motivating Spielberg in making the movie, too. So I think I'm glad you liked it. I do think it is a spectacular film achievement, that just because it's a silly adventure movie, you know, it can't be discounted as just being an amazing work of art on top of that.
Like, I can't remember the exact moment, but it was about 20 minutes in and I was like, oh, this is really special.
Yeah.
And I look forward to watching it again. Because when I watch it again, all of the things that surprised me and I found peculiar, I won't find surprising or peculiar anymore. And I think it was because I felt like I knew the movie going into the movie, but it actually turned out I didn't. So when things happened in it that surprised me, they were genuine surprises, and it shook what I thought the movie was. Yeah, I mean, I want to watch it again and look out and pay more attention to some of the cinematography and pay more attention to a lot of the scripts and stuff like that, without just seeing the spectacle and trying to follow the plot and the story.
Right. Well, it holds up under repeated viewing. Like I said, I've seen it maybe 50 times. I'm always noticing other things. It doesn't get old for me. And I'd recommend at some point you listen to episode 8 of The Incomparable, which
it's
is
now
me
been
and,
bumped up to my list.
Me and Dan Morin and John Gruber talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark for an hour. And, you know, it was, you know, we call out a lot of the little details that we appreciate. I would say for your next viewing, one of the things to watch is watch the shadows. Just watch the shadows.
Yeah, see, I didn't catch that. So.
It's crazy. When you start noticing the shadows, it's crazy. Like in that first scene, how the shadows tell the story, like Indiana Jones appears as a shadow. That's the first time we see him. And then throughout the way the shadows are used. I mean, Spielberg, it's a beautiful thing. And when I say The Last Crusade is a good movie, it is a good movie, but it, in my mind, you know, this is on a whole other level from that. This is, you know, one of the best, if not the best action adventure movie, I think ever. So, yeah.
Yep. You got a fan. You're doing well on this. 4 for 4.
Yay. Woohoo.
These are all becoming, not total favorites, but favorites. You know, like all of the three previous, really, I enjoy those movies. I will watch all of them again, and I like them a lot. But I think Raiders has gone in there now as like a, you need to watch this again so it can become one of your favorite movies.
Nice.
You know, that's how I feel about it. As I said, I found some things peculiar because, you know, it was a different time, and maybe I'm used to different types of violence now. And funnily enough, that violence, whilst more brutal, is less gory in these types of movies.
This is now we're in the sort of CGI superhero movie era, and the types of effects you can do with that are different. And they're not better or worse, they're different. And those stories that people are telling today are different. And the scale, like you look at an Avengers movie, and so much of the violence in a movie like that is on a massive scale. It speaks to, I think, our fears about terrorism and things like that, where we talk about, you know, cities being destroyed and buildings coming down, and that imagery is just endlessly played in superhero movies. And Raiders of the Lost Ark is not about that. It's about, you know, it's about other stuff. It's about some personal violence and some horror and the wrath of God, right? And things like that, which are supernatural. There's a much bigger supernatural element to Raiders than to a superhero movie. All right, Mike, and the movie is successful again. Woohoo!
Very, very. Genuinely, thank you for making me watch this movie.
I'm glad.
I may have never seen it because it's, you know, gets to a point where it's like, you haven't seen this movie, you maybe will never see it. Do you know what I mean? It's Indiana Jones, right? I'm 27 years old and I've not seen Indiana Jones. I may have never seen the movie, so I'm so happy that this exists, that this section exists, so I can find out all about all these great movies. I look forward to the next one.
All right.